Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartztrauber. On today's show, media ownership. If you want to buy a newspaper, it's as simple as that, right? Not so fast. The FCC has a lot of rules restricting how people own media, how their ad departments work, and recently the Third Circuit Court of Appeals threw out FCC rules restricting joint sales agreements. What are joint sales agreements? This actually does affect you. Joining me to discuss this is Matthew Berry, Chief of Staff to FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai. Matthew, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And unsuspected and uninvited is President of Tech Freedom, Baron Soka. Baron, thank you for joining and telling me about 30 minutes before we were about to record that you were joining.
You're welcome as always.
You know, I was getting ready for a different type of podcast and then I found out you were coming. So it's just a completely different mindset. So thanks for throwing me off.
Great. Anytime.
So Matthew, before we jump into this topic, let's kind of set the stage of why media ownership is even a tech policy issue in the first place. What is a joint sales agreement? Why does this matter?
Well, a joint sales agreement in the television context is two television stations agreeing to have a joint sales force to sell advertising on both stations. And the reason why many stations have entered into JSAs or joint sales agreements is because particularly in smaller or medium-sized markets, the economics of the television industry have changed tremendously over the last 20 to 25 years. And if stations are going to stay in business, they have to find efficiencies, they have to find ways to save costs. And one of them is to share a advertising sales force. So in many small or medium-sized markets, you've seen JSAs come into being, and it's had a tremendously positive effect in terms of allowing television stations not only to stay in business, but to invest in local news gathering, to invest in things like Doppler radar. In the Wichita, Kansas market, a JSA has enabled an Entrevision station to provide the only local Spanish language news in Kansas. And so joint sales agreements are basically just a way of saving money, cutting costs, and allowing stations to serve their local communities.
And it might sound like an obvious thing, but why would the FCC want to restrict something like this? Because this industry is under immense competitive pressure from the internet. And that's not something that was around, you know, commercially internet advertising before, you know, about 20 years ago. So people might take for granted that their local television station is under kind of the similar pressures that newspapers and magazines and just media that have been around longer are. So this sounds like an obvious thing. Share your ad team, share your sales force, pool resources. You know, it's a way of competing. Why would the FCC in any world want to restrict that?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right about how great the change has been in the advertising market over the last 30 years. You know, it used to be that there wasn't that much competition in terms of local television stations for markets. There was local television, there was radio, you could buy a newspaper ad. But just think about how much the ad market has changed, especially with the rise of digital and online advertising, the rise of cable television, just all the things that have happened over the last 30 years. What the FCC has said in terms of why they want to restrict it, supposedly, is that if one station is selling ads on behalf of another station, the first station would somehow be in a position to influence the second station's programming. Now, there are many problems with this, but the most obvious one is that the FCC is not able to point to a single example of one station in a JSA having influence over the other station's programming. Now, stepping back and looking at it, it is certainly true that if I'm selling ads on behalf of your station, I could provide your station with feedback in terms of what programming to have. You know, well, these sales are going well, these sales aren't going well. You might be able to make more money if you have a different program. But that's no different than advice that anyone could provide you. You could have an outside sales agency providing you that. You could have a consultant providing you that. There's no undue influence here. And there was no evidence in the record whatsoever to support this theory that the FCC had, that there was somehow impermissible control of one station by another station.
So even the hypothetical concern that I will somehow reduce the diversity of your programming, or maybe because my station is in an agreement with another station, I won't be serving my community enough with local programming. I mean, these are the hypothetical concerns, but as you say, they can't even point to one of these that has been proven. And this wouldn't be the first time that the FCC regulated over a hypothetical problem, cough, cough, net neutrality.
Right. Not only is the problem entirely hypothetical, but if you talk about localism and if you talk about diversity, all the evidence in the record is that joint sales agreements were good for localism and good for diversity. You know, we've talked about providing the only local Spanish language news in Kansas. That came about as a part of a JSA. Doppler radar that was used in Joplin, Missouri. They could make the investment in that and it saved lives during the Joplin tornado. That was because of cost efficiencies in terms of a JSA. And I can provide you with many more examples, but in terms of having local news gathering, in terms of diversity, allowing different voices to own television stations, JSAs have been very important. Commissioner Pai and I visited WLOO in Jackson, Mississippi last year. That is a station that is owned by Tougaloo College, an African-American college. And they are in a JSA with another station in their market. And the general manager of the station told us that the JSA has been critical to allowing that station to survive. Similarly, the lead petitioner in the Third Circuit case was Howard Sterk Holdings, which is an African-American owned company. And they have television stations that have JSAs with Sinclair. And they have also said that, you know, they would not be a successful broadcaster were it not for joint sales agreements. So it's not only that you have hypothetical harms that the FCC is trying to combat, it's that their rule inflicts real harms when it comes to localism and diversity.
So bottom line, Congress authorized the FCC to regulate media ownership, and you're saying that joint sales agreements actually promote the goals that Congress had in mind of increasing diversity and localism, and that the FCC's effort to restrict joint sales agreements is counterproductive. It's doing the opposite of what Congress intended.
Well, it is counterproductive, and Congress has weighed in on this issue also. After the FCC's rules, which not only prohibited stations from entering into new JSAs, but extraordinarily said that existing JSAs would have to be unwound within 2 years, Congress on a bipartisan basis in last year's omnibus spending bill told the FCC, no, we want you to grandfather the existing JSAs for 10 years. And there's been bipartisan opposition to the FCC's JSA rule, including from such noted right-wing extremists as Senator Charles Schumer, Senator Dick Durbin, Senator Barbara Mikulski. So this has not been a left-right issue. This has not been a Democrat-Republican issue. Congress, on a bipartisan basis, was very disturbed by what the FCC had done.
Two things that come to mind. One, is there something paternalistic about the FCC restricting these agreements? Because it's in the term itself. It's an agreement. In theory, a small station that agrees to let a bigger station help them sell ads is doing that on a voluntary basis because they think it's good for them. So when the FCC restricts these agreements or institutes a waiver process that might be vague, and we can talk about that in a little bit, is the FCC basically saying, we know what's best for you? And is there an elitism there, in addition to a paternalism, saying that what's best is just having multiple stations not be collaborating because consolidation is bad for its own sake, rather than recognizing the benefits that maybe consolidation in something like this could actually promote diversity?
I think it's a failure to recognize the reality of the modern television market. I think that's really what at its core. You know, the FCC would love to have the days back in the 70s and 80s when many of these markets where you could have, you know, three or four fully independent stations with fully independent news gathering operations, fully independent advertising sales forces. And in the 70s or 80s, the economy and the state of the market allowed you to do that. But a lot has changed, and as in so many other areas, the FCC refuses to recognize the extraordinary changes in the market. And the choice we have in many of these markets isn't to have joint sales agreements or have the two stations be fully independent and have independent sales forces, advertising sales forces. In many of these markets, the choice is, do you want to have two stations in a JSA, or do you want one of the stations to go out of business? And so I just think it's a failure of the FCC to understand or to be willing to understand the realities of the modern marketplace.
And what exactly did these restrictions look like? And was there any process to get into JSAs? I mean, how hard is it? How hard was the status quo? And do you see that the court throwing out this agreement because the FCC didn't do its job will be immediately beneficial?
So I think we're going to have to wait and see. I think that in terms of the impact on the marketplace, the FCC said, well, there'll be a waiver process where you can keep a JSA or try to enter into a new JSA. But the waiver process, as we suspected, was a sham. The FCC did not give, after it issued its rule, a single waiver of the prohibition on JSAs. And when Chairman Wheeler was selling this JSA rule, he specifically told Congress there would be this waiver opportunity and that so-called good JSAs would be allowed to continue. And one of those good JSAs he specifically referred to was the Wichita JSA involving the local Spanish language news in Kansas. But when they applied in Wichita for a waiver from the JSA prohibition, the Media Bureau turned that down. So Chairman Wheeler told one thing to Congress when he was trying to justify the rule, but then he turned around and, as we suspected, denied the waiver when the petition was actually filed. So while there was this waiver process in place, in reality, it was just an across-the-board prohibition. There was no indication prior to the Third Circuit's decision that the commission was ever going to grant a waiver to anyone of the JSA rule.
So we're seeing a pattern here where the FCC hasn't conducted its review as it's required by law. In terms of the problems that it was trying to solve with the restriction, it said that it couldn't point to a single actual problem. It was all hypothetical. And then in terms of granting waivers, they grant zero waivers.
Right. And what's important to know, and what the Third Circuit really focused on, was what made this all the more egregious is that the FCC is under a statutory obligation to review its media ownership rules every 4 years. And that includes the local television ownership rule. How many stations can you own in a market? The FCC has not finished such a review since the end of 2007. So Congress said you have to justify every 4 years the rules as being in the public interest, and if you can't, you have to change them. And it's been over 8 years since the FCC has tried to justify whether these rules are in the public interest. So in 2014, what the commission did is said, we're going to punt on deciding whether or not the local television ownership rule is still in the public interest. But at the same time, we're going to tighten the rule by changing the JSA rule. And what the court said is, no, you can't tighten the JSA rule when you're under a statutory obligation to review every 4 years whether or not the rules are in the public interest, and you just punt. And in particular, what even makes it worse is that the FCC didn't offer any reason why it was punting on that obligation. In particular, the court specifically said that there was no cogent response to the argument that the delay was unwarranted. So, the Third Circuit, if you read the opinion, was obviously very frustrated by the FCC's procedural shenanigans.
And Matthew, so they haven't done the review for over 8 years, but the underlying methodology, how much has that changed? Has the FCC updated that to reflect the fact that we're no longer living in the 1990s and there are other games in town besides just the television station, the radio station, the broadcaster, you know, there's the internet?
You're absolutely right. And I don't think that, you know, we have not completed a review since the end of 2007. I think one could fairly argue that even in 2007, we didn't take adequate account of the new outlets and all the competition out there. But certainly since 2007, there have been enormous changes in the marketplace. And I was working in the Office of General Counsel the last time we completed a media ownership review, and I was very involved, in fact, with that order and with coming up with justification for the local television ownership rule. And I can tell you that even back in 2007, the justification for the local television ownership rule was incredibly weak. We had to sit around, we were under instructions that we had to come up with a justification for it at the time. And we sat around a table and just threw out ideas in terms of how can we justify this. And I think the case for it now is even weaker than it was then.
And just to put a finer point on this, the FCC is still counting TV stations, radio stations, newspapers. They're not counting the internet, right? That's not part of their analysis.
Right. So, for instance, there is no prohibition on, let's say, Facebook buying the New York Times.
Or Jeff Bezos buying the Washington
Post.
Yes,
or Amazon buying the Washington Post. However, a company that would own a single radio station in Washington, D.C., can't buy the Washington Post. Does that make any sense whatsoever?
And that brings us to the bigger picture, because it's not just joint sales agreements. The entire media ownership landscape is shaped by rules like this. And as Barron points out, how you define the market is so important. And I think we can all agree it's insane that a company that competes in the media marketplace the way that Amazon does with Amazon Video and things like that, and they're definitely involved, and these narrowly defined markets are outdated, they can buy the Washington Post, but WTOP, the local radio station, could not. And if the big fear is giant corporations owning things, that's just absurd. Both any entity that wants to compete should be able to compete. And anyone who's observing the media landscape sees, local newspapers are struggling, magazines are struggling. It's not necessarily that they should all die out. It's that maybe there are some things that the government does that makes it harder for them to succeed and compete. And there still is a need for local news coverage, and not all local news is struggling as much. So maybe a newspaper is struggling, but the local TV station's thriving because people still want local news. People still need their state houses covered and their local city council covered. And there's plenty of national media out there. You've got CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, but you still need that local news. And wouldn't it be great if your local television station that already knows a lot about those beats can buy a newspaper, pool their resources, cross-promote content, and really serve a community? That seems so obvious. How the hell is that illegal?
Well, the FCC has not been able to justify this rule for over a decade. It's important to recognize that back with the 2002 review, the FCC voted to end the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership rule. Unfortunately, that didn't survive Third Circuit review. Back in 2007, the commission voted to loosen the rule. That failed in the Third Circuit on procedural grounds. They said we hadn't given adequate notice. So in this last go-round in 2014, the commission just punted and said, well, we are going to take more time to decide.
Well, the clock is ticking because people see these changes are happening
right.
fast.
And so as the Third Circuit noted, it's been more than a decade. And when you see what's happening to the newspaper industry, the idea that we would want to restrict the range of companies that could buy newspapers doesn't seem to make any sense. In this day and age, if you actually want to buy a newspaper, we should probably be thanking you. We should not be putting regulatory barriers in your way. And there are efficiencies that can be gained in terms of news gathering and the like if you have cross-owned newspapers and television stations and newspapers or radio stations. And the continued regulation of this is entirely arbitrary and counterproductive. At the same time, however, I do think we need to recognize that because this rule has been in place for so long and we weren't able to get rid of it over a decade ago, the question is, have we missed the window to really be of help? If you look, for instance, at what a lot of stations that do have both newspapers and broadcast stations are doing, kind of grandfathered combinations from before the rule went into effect in 1975, you do see now that they're kind of splitting up into two companies so that the ownership of the newspapers doesn't hamper the stock value of the broadcast company. And that isn't to say that we shouldn't get rid of the rule, because of course we should. It's arbitrary. If people want to cross-own, that's great. But I think had we gotten rid of the rule more than a decade ago, it probably would have had more of an impact than it will getting rid of it today. I think getting rid of it today can have some positive impact, but I do think this is an example where we've just waited so long that a lot of the positive that we could have gotten out of this, I think, probably has passed.
Yeah, it looks like the FCC just failed to move at the pace of the market.
So why has it taken so long politically? Why has there been such an opposition to recognizing that the world has changed?
Well, I will say that our friends on the left, I think, have done a very effective job, as in the case of net neutrality, of mounting scare campaigns and putting political pressure on people. You know, it's very interesting that once FCC chairmen leave office, they seem to be very free to talk about how they really think that the newspaper broadcast crash ownership rule doesn't make much sense. You know, Reed Hunt, I think, wrote a column for the Washington Post, for instance, in the last 3 or 4 years, saying he didn't believe.
And that was Clinton's first chairman.
Clinton's first FCC chairman. I think Bill Kennard has said publicly that he doesn't believe it makes sense. I know Chairman Jenikowski, who was Obama's first chair, also said that the rule as it stands doesn't make much sense. So I think it's much easier for people, once they're out of office and not subject to political pressure, to be forthright in their views. But, you know, I do think, as in the case of net neutrality, that among many on the left, this becomes an almost religious issue, and it's immune to sober factual discussion. And they, as well as some Democrats on Capitol Hill, on the newspaper broadcast crush ownership rule, just put extraordinary pressure on the Democratic commissioners, you know, not to weaken the rules one bit.
Yeah, if you narrowly define any market, you can scare people about consolidation, because if you fail to point out that there's a bunch of boutique blogs serving a local news or local community, or a bunch of podcasts in a local community, or local stations, and just all of the competition, and you just focus on newspaper, radio, these old silos, you can of course freak people out and say, oh, it's going to be one voice and they're going to have all the control and they'll be a gatekeeper and blah, blah, blah. But consolidation and people buying each other out is not necessarily bad for its own sake. And that's the problem with the religious viewpoint. It's not about looking at each individual community on a discrete basis, case by case. It's not about recognizing market competition. It's just media organizations buying each other is bad, no matter what the economics are. So where do you see this going from here? To wrap up the show, we had the court ruling, they threw out the rule, but you earlier said you didn't think this was going to lead to a flurry of new JSAs just yet. Where do you see this going in the future and media ownership more generally?
So the court was very harshly critical of the FCC for failing to complete the review of the media ownership rules, known as the quadrennial review. Now, what the broadcasters had argued is, in light of the FCC's failure to comply with the statutory mandate, the court should vacate all the rules, get rid of all the media ownership rules. The court said that it was not prepared to do so right now, but it did say it was very troubled by the FCC's delay, and that if the FCC did not get this done by the end of the year, then the answer, if the broadcasters came back, might very well be different. So I think what the court has said will put extraordinary pressure on the FCC to complete the review of the media ownership rules by the end of the year. I also think there was language in this opinion which suggests that the court is expecting that there will be some modification of the rules, particularly on the newspaper broadcast crush ownership side. So I think, you know, between now and the end of the year, the commission's going to be considering whether or not to change the rules. I think that, you know, given the way things have gone at the FCC lately, I'm not optimistic that we'll be able to come to some kind of bipartisan compromise to liberalize the rules. But I do think that if the FCC does not loosen the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership rule, that they will have a difficult time getting that sustained in court. Now, with respect to the joint sales agreement issue, I have little doubt, given how much political capital Chairman Wheeler has expended on this rule, that he will try to reenact it is part of the FCC winding up the review of media ownership regulations. Whether or not he'll be able to get 3 votes for that, I'm not sure. He had a little bit of trouble getting three votes for it the first time, given the bipartisan opposition on the Hill, the fact that it was vacated by the Third Circuit once. Can he get three votes for it again? I just don't know.
Yeah, and having two Republican commissioners often in opposition to Chairman Wheeler means that any one of his two Democratic colleagues actually wields a lot of political power.
Yes. Now, on the other hand, he's been extraordinarily successful at getting his Democratic colleagues to vote with him.
That was the first topic of our, yes, of our previous podcast.
But on the other hand, I do think with the legislative rebuke, with the judicial rebuke, I at least have some hope that maybe we can stop him from re-enacting this. Also, underlying this, it's not just the JSA issue. In our review of the media ownership rules, we should take a hard look at whether or not to modify the local television ownership rule, because part of the need for JSAs comes from the fact that the local television ownership rule is unduly restrictive. And, you know, I think we should take a hard look in some of these markets. You know, if there's a smaller market, you know, should the same company be allowed to own both the NBC and the ABC affiliate? I think you can make a very strong case that the efficiencies that would come from that would enable both of those stations to be stronger stations. And so I do think that in addition to not restricting JSAs, we also need to look at liberalizing the local television ownership rules to reflect the reality of the economic situation, particularly in smaller markets.
That's it for today's show. My guest has been Matthew Berry, Chief of Staff to FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai. Matthew, thanks for joining the show again.
Thanks for having me.
And also joining me was Barron. Barron, thanks.
You're welcome, Evan.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Let us know what you think of the show at our email us at media@techfreedom.org. And find this podcast in the iTunes store. Please leave us a review because it will help others find the show. Thanks for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.